Blog Talk Radio.
We're bold and courageous. We're leading families, whole countries, companies, entire nations. We are women, and we are the world. It's Women's History Month. Hello, I am Carol Copeland Thomas, the host of Focus on Empowerment. We welcome you to today's show. I am really excited to be on internet radio, having been on terrestrial radio for 11 years, hosting this show on two different Boston radio stations. Welcome to Focus on Empowerment. We are determined to bring you the latest and the greatest information, the most valuable information and tips that will help you in your personal and your professional life. I've had the opportunity to work with people all over the United States and elsewhere outside of the country, focusing on multiculturalism, global diversity, and empowerment and in leadership issues. But I love the radio because I have a chance to interview some of the most fascinating people all over the world. The exciting thing for me being on Blog Talk Radio is the capacity and the opportunity to really connect with people outside of the United States. I really look at this show as being global. So I'm really excited that you're with us today. If you're listening live, welcome to Focus on Empowerment. If you're listening to the show as an archive, we would love for you to shoot your ideas our way. You can always email me at tellcarole, that's T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, at mac.com. That's tellcarole@mac.com. Send me your ideas so that we can really make this show for you an exciting platform and a place where you can learn an awful lot about focusing on empowerment, leadership issues, and the world beyond. Well, this month is March, and we are going to be having three programs in the month of March next week as well. We're going to take you outside of the United States and share with you some educational opportunities and things that are taking place in another part of the world that I'll tell you about later on. But we're going to, and then the following week, we're going to take you live to a conference, the Multicultural Forum in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And my special guests that day are both two people, Bill Wells, who is the chair of the National Black MBA Association and also the co-producer for a very large multicultural conference in Minnesota, where I will be speaking and will bring that program to you live. And I'm also very excited because Connie Schultz, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the Cleveland Plain Dealer, will also be my guest on that show on March 18th. So stay tuned. We've got lots of exciting things to bring your way. Well, my very first guest today, and later on this afternoon, we're going to talk about the Census Bureau and how important it is, with Tanisha Sullivan and Janine Quarles, two of my very dear friends, the chapter president and the leader of the census effort with the Boston Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. So stay tuned with that for that. We will give you more information later on. But I'd like to just spend the next half an hour talking with another great woman, a wonderful friend, and she has so much valuable information as a life coach and also as the director of Equal Opportunity for Lesley University. I'm very, very excited. She's the Equal Opportunity and Inclusion Director at Lesley University, where she collaborates with the president, the president's council, and the diversity council, and she leads and provides strategic planning and direction for the university's diversity effort. Without further ado, Dr. Barbara Addison Reed, welcome to my program, Focus on Empowerment.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm so glad to have you on. Give me a sense. I mean, we celebrate lots of months. I have Diversity Awareness Month. There are other months we have days like, obviously, Mother's Day and Father's Day and religious holidays. What's the significance of Women's History Month from your perspective, Barbara?
Well, historically, the reason we have traditions of celebration is that we want to highlight certain events or people or groups within our society. And in recent years, Women's History Month has become a focal point to celebrate women in all of their endeavors.
And Lord knows we need to be celebrated because Lord knows we do work enough.
That's true.
And like so many of our commemorative holidays, this was started by one woman and pushing the cause further. There's an organization out in California that year-round talks about women and deals with the issues of women. With your perspective as an educator, as someone who's been in administration for many years in universities, including Bentley University and now Lesley, how are women faring? How are they growing? Are they advancing in the field of academics?
Well, the answer to that question is yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because today women are afforded the opportunity under equal employment opportunity laws to participate in the recruitment and hiring process. And so today, more so than ever, women are having opportunity to not only work in organizations, but to take leadership positions in organizations. Where nationally we continue to fall behind is in the area of compensation. And the most recent data shows that for every dollar a man earns, women earn approximately 71 cents.
It seems like it's gone down. It was like 76 cents before. Now it's 71 cents. Wow.
Well, given this these economic times, salaries in general are in decline.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember when I first started to work, it was like 64 cents on the dollar. So we have
profit.
Made some progress,
wow.
But clearly not enough.
And what does research show, or what are we, why are we lagging behind in compensation? And is it because what we don't ask for is there just a general bias against women? What's research showing in that front?
Well, by and large, it's historical. Given that women didn't get the vote until 1920, they were not considered as head of household. And many women today are, salaries fell behind because men who were in positions of authority made decisions that men were the breadwinner of their families and therefore they should be paid a better wage. Now, clearly that is changing today, but because of the historical fact that women entered the world of work later and were paid less, it's very difficult to overcome that position today. And so it's something that organizations tend to pay attention to, but it's still a struggle.
Hmm. And I mean, it's not, have you, the struggle I think is worldwide. The struggle certainly is very profound here in the United States when women everywhere, and particularly women here in the United States, hold such important roles. So frequently they're in very important support roles within industry, certainly healthcare, education, and corporate America, but yet just can't seem to push ahead to get to that top seat and to not have lots of bows and arrows thrown at them, should I say, or slung at them because of the positions that they hold. Do you find that women are now being put in positions where they're getting better opportunities to manage their own career path and provide the kind of language that they need to get the compensation that they are afforded and that they have well deserved? Or are we like accepting what's given to us?
Well, it's a bit of both. If you look at leadership positions in academic institutions across the United States, there are more women today than there ever have been historically. And the same thing with corporations. And so women are breaking through into the top leadership positions. But it's also due in part to the way we have been acculturated, and that is to see ourselves in support positions rather than in leadership roles, and to accept what is given to us rather than ask for what we believe we are due.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's overcoming the culture of just being accepting of what's given to you.
And, see,
and learning the language to ask for additional consideration.
And that's such a key point, Barbara Addison Reed, in terms of, first of all, being comfortable with the language and also being comfortable with what's due you. Not that people are giving you anything. Women are certainly working at the jobs, working very hard at all the jobs that they have, and then going home in so many cases and raising children. But it's developing that language and that confidence and the empowerment skills that you really need so that you can go into your boss's office and diplomatically negotiate a higher salary. I think there's still a lot of work that we need to do in that area.
I couldn't agree with you more, Carol. It's interesting to note that a conversation that I often have with MBA students is, you need to be in charge of yourself. You need to be in charge of your own professional development. You need to take courses to make sure that when opportunity presents itself, you are prepared. Now, once you are prepared, I advocate that every person should write an annual Dear Boss letter to their upline manager.
I like that.
The letter should include the achievements that you've accomplished over the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, short-term memory is about 3 months long, so if you did a project 6 or 9 months ago, that may not receive, the results may not receive fair consideration by your manager simply because they've forgotten about it.
Right.
So it's incumbent upon you to write that letter and to tout your achievements. Again, women are told not to do that, and so I'm encouraging both men and women to take the opportunity to influence what happens to your pay by writing that Dear Boss letter.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've outlined your results and your achievements for the last 12 months, what you also might do is go to salary.com,
right,
put in a job title, mm-hmm, and your zip code, and at no cost, what will come up on the website is what the pay range is for the position that you're in. You can assess from that whether you are being appropriately paid for the work that you're doing. Now, this is a quick way to do an assessment, but keep in mind that the data that's being provided to you is not based on a lot of depth of information that is directly related to your job description. But it is a way of telling or finding out whether you are within range. And if you realize that you are seasoned and experienced and you are not at the 50th percentile but being paid less than that, then you not only have your achievements to negotiate but also salary information that shows what the appropriate pay is for your job in your geographical area, keeping in mind that salaries can change depending upon whether you live in, for example, the central United States versus the East or West Coast.
Right, right.
And so if you have a number in mind or a range, you certainly can use that as information to say to your manager, I'm being paid X, the salary in our geographical area is Y. How can we figure out how to close the gap between what I'm being paid and the value of this job to the organization? We're not talking about your value, but the value of the job in the marketplace and to that organization.
So what you're saying, and we're listening, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. My special guest during Women's History Month is Dr. Barbara Addison Reed, a longtime veteran in HR executive work, now the Director of Equal Opportunity and Inclusion at Lesley University here in Boston. You mentioned salary.com. They're actually based here in the Boston area. And what you're also saying is that you're expecting people to take control of their own careers and to do their homework before they have this conversation with their boss or they write this letter, this Dear Boss letter, to their superior.
That's correct.
Mm. So in looking with that, I just want to sort of shift gears a little bit while we still are in this interview, and talk to us about the significant role with women of color, African-American women, Latina women, Asian-American women, women of color, particularly in the United States. Are there extra steps that have to be done or used in order for advancement? Here we're talking about the world of work.
So your question for me, Carol, is that do women of color have to do things that are extraordinary in order to receive fair consideration? Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, not necessarily extraordinary, but maybe a little different or enhanced work, enhanced preparation.
Well, I would say extraordinary or enhanced, yes. Given the history of race relations in the United States, and because we are not in a position of strength, historically speaking, mm-hmm. when it comes to entering the world of work and receiving fair treatment, it behooves us to be exceptionally prepared to take advantage of opportunity, to continue to move ourselves forward.
Right.
And that simply means that education is a lifelong process, and it matters little whether you're in a degree program. Your thirst and your curiosity for learning should last a lifetime.
Right.
And so to annually take time to participate in a course, whether it's offered by your employer or at a local university,
mm-hmm.
Or something that you find of interest to you that is on the web, take advantage of that so that you are continuing to feed yourself so that you're learning new things. The other thing that I would suggest, and this is something that I do continuously, and that is to read.
Mm.
You don't have to be in a structured situation in order to learn. You can do that on your own.
Mm.
One of the things that I like to do is to share with people who simply ask me, what have you read lately? I always have an annotated bibliography of books that I've read recently that are
wow.
of interest to me.
That's amazing.
Because I want to share that and encourage other people to read so
mm-hmm.
that you're continuing to feed yourself with the knowledge and provide yourself with the experiences that will support your continued growth.
And what's amazing about your advice in terms of taking the course and reading and you having the annotated bibliography is we're talking about technology. This radio program is being shared on an internet platform where a lot of people just read it in very small bites. And so you're sort of going against the norm by asking them to do that. And we would love to have you to call in and ask your questions of Dr. Barbara Addison Reed. Our number is 646-727-2766. 646-727-2766, and I'm really excited because we have people in our chat room who are just listening to our conversation, so that's really quite good. So how has all this worked for you? You certainly have climbed the ladder of success in academia. You have dealt with issues and resolved those issues. What's been your anchor? What's been the motivator for you in your career path, Dr. Reed?
Well, the anchor for me has always been my family. I want to give a shout out to my son, Phil Brathwaite, who is listening to this program. I have a stepdaughter, Sonia Brathwaite, as well. The family has been the anchor for me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the knowledge that in order to continue to move forward, one has to invest in themselves and their education.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes the foundation for future career success.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have always been highly motivated. In fact, I have been an adult learner. I have worked full-time and gone to school part-time in earning 3 degrees.
Wow. Oh, that says a lot.
The other thing, yes,
and you're
thank
still
you.
Standing.
Yes, I'm still standing.
Yes.
The other thing that is really important is taking care of yourself and striving for balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
so that you know what your priorities are, you know where you're spending your time and energy, but you also bring a balance so that you're just not a single dimension. You must be multidimensional in your pursuits in life.
Mm-hmm. And I think even more so now because we're so distracted, I could just probably write a chapter on what's happened to me just today, just between getting up in the morning, car problems, other issues, things that had to be done, deadlines that had to be met this morning, and then do a radio program. And that's pretty much the norm for all of us. So when we look at our younger women, and I mean, you and I are about, we're contemporaries, we're in the 21 year old plus range, plus.
Yes.
But you know, I'm really a big advocate now on those baby boomers like you and me to begin the process of transferring knowledge to the next generation, because in so many cases, the people that I deal with now, they are already in decision-making modes, and there's so much experience and there's so many things that we have gone through in life that we need to share with those who are up-and-coming and emerging leaders. What kind of advice would you share with our listeners if they have younger bosses or adult children or young people who are in school or those who are aspiring, wherever they happen to be? What kind of advice would you give the average woman today as she's looking at her life and looking at ways that she can transfer that knowledge to others?
Well, I think it's important to engage with young people.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons that I went to work in academic institutions throughout my career, because I really do enjoy young adults and providing them with guidance and support and a sense of direction. The piece of advice that I would give to anyone at any age is to realize that you are in charge of your life. You are responsible for the choices you make. And where you end up is fully in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide that you want to pursue a career in a particular industry, which is what I did years ago, and that is to be a human resources professional in academic institutions, I could have chosen, for example, here in Massachusetts, to spend my career working in health and hospitals. That's another kind of nonprofit organization. Or I could have decided to work in for-profit organizations such as high tech or the finance industry. Those are the four prevalent industries in Massachusetts.
Right.
And one can have a career in an industry, and really that supports your career growth when you stay in a particular industry. So it's important to think about the choices that one has before them and to make conscious choice on how you're managing your career.
Mm-hmm. Probably lends itself to the kind of courses you take if you're in college, the young adults who are listening and those who will be listening to the archive version, watch the classes that you take. And also, can you also talk about networking? And I look at the job market that we have today. We are recovering from a really rugged recession. We're hoping that the job market will pick up certainly the third and fourth quarter of this year. But why is networking so significant? And maybe you can point to an example where networking has benefited you in your career path.
Well, networking is absolutely critical. The way you find jobs are reading about it in the newspaper or online, cold calling certain industries' employers, and through the network. Networking is the most productive.
Mm-hmm.
And the advice that I would give is this. Tap into any of your colleagues, connections, friends, or your parents' friends, connections, colleagues. And from each individual, try and get three names and their permission to use their name in making contact with those three individuals. If the three individuals each give you three names, three becomes nine becomes 27.
Mm.
That's how you use the network exponentially.
Mm.
the permission to use the original person's name with their contacts gives you instant credibility. So it's not as though everybody that you reach out to in the network will have a job opportunity for you.
Right.
What's important is to get those three more names. And, oh, by the way, along the way, you will find a job that's appropriate for you. The name of the game is to have as many contacts as possible until you land.
Great advice. And so what you're saying is that you're working with your core group family members,
yes,
friends who are around you, and they will know X number of people who will know X number of people, and that's how your sphere of influence grows.
Exactly.
And your capacity to find employment or new opportunities will grow. And so often we don't think about that, so particularly women. You just look at, you know, the people who are right around you, but you don't go beyond that. And I think what you're also saying is that the power of asking, the importance,
yes,
of asking.
Absolutely,
that's
absolutely.
Great advice. I'm going to be so bold and courageous because I know my friend Marquesa Petway is listening to the program, and I don't see her hand raised, but I'm going to bring her in this conversation as we're closing down because she may have some other words of wisdom to share with us as well. Let's see if I can pull her in. Do I have Marquesa?
Yes, you do. I'm here.
Hey, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, I'm enjoying. This is great.
And you are such a great networker. So I wanted, Barbara, this is Marquesa Petway, a fabulous colleague in New York City. And actually, she introduced me to Blog Talk. And I learned
so
much.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yes. I learned so much from Marquesa, and I thought maybe in 30 seconds or less, Marquesa, you could add to the conversation. We're now talking about networking and how important it is for women, since it is Women's History Month.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I would love? You know, my favorite thing, Carol, is masterminding. I think joining a mastermind, and, you know, it can be as small as 3 or 4 individuals to as many as, I would say, 10 at the most, and getting with folks with like goals and like mindsets and really committing to accomplishing your goals together and discussing, you know, the strengths, the weaknesses, and the challenges. And just, you know, just to take that, you know, what your guest just said to that next level, you know, network with your mastermind partners and talk to their connections, and then just do your own, I guess, events together or your own campaigns together, because we need that support. Otherwise, we feel like we're the lone ranger, and without that accountability, we tend to sort of slow down and we're inconsistent with going the distance. So that would be my quick advice.
Yeah, that's great advice, and thanks for sharing that with us. And that certainly works well for those of us who are small business owners. And the wonderful thing about this program is that we're looking at women across the board, not only women who are working in academia or working in corporations, working 9-to-5 jobs, but certainly those who are striking out on their own and starting their own businesses and becoming either solopreneurs or entrepreneurs. The issues are still the same, Barbara. I mean, that's the thing. I've been out here 23 years or so, and some of the same issues and struggles that I've encountered as a small business owner, I see happening with women on the inside. So it's this collective support that we need for each other so that we can help each other to move ahead, because I need women on the inside for the business that I do, just like they need my services. And really, one hand sort of washes and helps the other. Well, in closing, Barbara, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being a guest on my program. And can you give us some closing words of wisdom from the experiences that you've had in a leadership role? I should also say you were the president of the Northeast Human Resources Association several years ago. Your leadership speaks for itself on Lesley's campus and elsewhere. And tell us a little bit about Lesley University, too.
Well, Lesley University is celebrating its centennial this year, founded in 1909 as a women's college. And today there are 4 divisions: Lesley College, Art Institute of Boston, which is located on Beacon Street, the School of Education, and the Graduate School of Social Sciences. And so undergraduate population about 1,800 and graduate students about 8,000, located in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and 23 locations in other states. So it's a wonderful school that is really focused on social work and teaching and the arts, and it's a wonderful environment to be in.
That's great. And is distance learning now picking up on your campus as it is on so many college and university campuses?
Yes, absolutely. Our approach is to do both distance learning, that is solely by through technology, and to do face-to-face, and to do what we call blended. It's a combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the wave of the future.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is, and it's here now, too. It's just amazing what technology can do, and we're going to talk more and more about that as our show progresses here on Blog Talk. I have someone else who's joined us. I'm not sure if they have a question for us. Do you have a question directed at Dr. Barbara Addison Reed? 111 is the area code I see. Well, I'm sure that's just a great listener. I just want to say thank you so much for being a guest on my program, Dr. Barbara Addison Reed. She has been my guest today, just one of the senior staff members at Lesley University, the Director of Equal Opportunity and Inclusion at Lesley. If you'd like more information about Lesley University, you can go to their website, www.lesley.edu. Is that correct, Barbara?
Yes, it is. And Carol, thank you for having me on your program. It's been my pleasure.
It's been super. Thank you so much for being my guest, Dr. Barbara Addison Reed. Super. Well, we want to move on, and we're going to talk about the Census Bureau and just how important it is. And before we do that, every week I want to just pause this month and pay tribute to women. I'm also going to pay tribute probably to a couple of men because we did not broadcast in the month of February, but I like to pay tribute to those who contributed to our country and are commemorated and recognized with Black History Month. So we're going to go back and pull in some of those details as well. We're also going to talk about just some of the heroic things that have happened. And this woman, I just think, is just awesome. So we're going to pay tribute to a fabulous woman in just about 10 seconds. We're talking about the tremendous accomplishments and the bold and courageous steps that were made by a figure from our past. Black history always involved movement, action, and risk-taking. And some people marched while others went to jail. Some simply boarded midnight trains for Detroit, New York, Boston, and points farther north. One of those trains north included Ellen Craft, a fugitive slave who stopped at nothing to gain her freedom. In 1848, Craft and her husband launched their great escape by successfully outsmarting officials with a calculated plan. Since Ellen looked white, she dressed up as a man, with her husband posing as her servant. So that they wouldn't give themselves away, her husband did all of the talking as she posed as a passenger too sick to communicate. One daring movement led to the next, and by grace, their journey took them north to freedom. Ellen Craft, smart, daring, and willing to risk it all. That's empowerment. That's Black history. That's women's history. And we thank the people of Amtrak and elsewhere for bringing this information to our attention so that we can just point out how significant women like Ellen Craft was in her day in the 1840s and certainly moving forward. And I just think about what courage, intellect, wit it took to dress up as she did and to move about a train without speaking, having her husband to do all the work for her, and then to finally find her way to freedom. She ended up in Boston for a short while, then went to Canada with her family, and then went all the way to England for several years before returning to the United States after the Civil War. And she actually set up a school back in Georgia where she was from. The school stayed open for a number of years, but she is just one courageous woman. We're looking at those courageous women past and present during Women's History Month. I'm Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. We love the fact that so many people are listening in our chat room today. We hope that you'll send us ideas and suggestions. Feel free to email me at Tell Carol, that's TellCarole, at mac.com. We have very exciting programs planned for you going forward. We're going to shift gears a bit and now talk with two of my closest friends and colleagues in Boston Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Many of you are probably saying, a sorority? Now, I thought she said she was a baby boomer, which I am. But when you look at African-American sororities and fraternities, that commitment extends an entire lifetime. And we take on challenges and issues that are socially relevant, important in terms of our civic engagement. We don't take sides in terms of endorsing political candidates, but we definitely look at the issues. And I believe we have our Boston chapter president, Tanisha Sullivan, on the line, who's going to share with us information and things that we did this past weekend related to the Census Bureau. Do I have Tanisha on the line?
Yes, I am here, Carol.
Hello, welcome, Attorney Tanisha Sullivan. Thank you. She is the chapter president. And again, I was just explaining to our listeners, we have people who are listening live and those who are going to who are listening in the chat room. And then those who are going to be listening on the archive, and they're going to say, wait a minute, I thought sororities were just for college parties, and you pledge on campus, and then that's the end of it. And you're talking about parties and beyond parties. So exactly what is Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and what the heck are they doing with the Census Bureau?
Well, thank you, Carol, and congratulations on your new platform for Focus on Empowerment. We're really excited about what is in store for you as you go global.
Thank you.
Well, Delta Sigma Theta, founded in 1913, is an organization of college-educated women committed to the constructive development of its members, but just as importantly, committed to public service, primarily in the Black community. We have well over 250,000 members worldwide. Yes.
That's a lot.
Yes.
A lot of scoreboards.
It is. And as you mentioned, members of our organization are as young as 17, 18 years old and as old as 97 years old, because membership in Delta Sigma Theta, as with all historically Black Greek organizations, is a lifetime commitment, and our commitment to service is never ending. With that being said, our national president, Cynthia Butler McIntyre, designated February 27th of this year our National Census Awareness Day. And so chapters of Delta all over the country engaged in census awareness activities and programs within their local communities to help raise awareness about what the census is, and it's in the importance of completing the census forms and the impact that it has on the respective communities.
So we look at that, and every 10 years, by act of our Constitution, started in 1790 when we had our first census that was taken. So every 10 years, we have family households who have to fill out this form. And then why is it so important, particularly now, for head of households and people who live in this country to pay attention and to fill out the census form, Tanisha?
As you mentioned, the census count occurs every 10 years, and it is simply a count to establish the number of people residing in the country. Okay, there are over $400 billion that are allocated to communities based on the count. Those dollars, it's a lot of money.
Wow.
And those dollars are allocated for social services, education. For example, the number of schools that are either built within a community or the number of teachers required in a community to service the residents, or the number of Head Start programs that may be needed in a community. So if you have a baby residing in your household,
right,
newborn baby residing in your household, you want to count that baby because within the next 5 years, that child will be entering the school system. Okay, and the census count helps to establish what the education and educational and social service needs of a community may be. In addition, the census count helps to ensure the protection of our civil rights. So what does that mean? In this country, we in the United States, now that you're global, I have to be specific, Carol. In the United States, we have the Voting Rights Act. And simply put, the Voting Rights Act was enacted in order to protect the voting rights of all people within the country.
Right.
And specifically, their access to representation in our legislature. So one of the things that the census serves to do is to make sure that legislative district lines are properly drawn, okay? And so, for example, here in Massachusetts, we are at risk for losing a congressional seat because it is anticipated that our count in the census is going to decrease.
Right.
Okay?
And so that's even reason enough for everyone to make sure they're counted so that we can have full representation, and because we are running that risk of losing a congressional seat.
Right, exactly. And so what does that mean for the average everyday citizen? What it means is that we will lose a vote in Congress. Or are at risk for losing a vote in Congress. And
right,
we all know with all of the major issues that are legislative issues that are on the table, whether we're talking about health care reform or education reform, economic recovery issues, every vote counts.
Right, right. And we have the concern that we have, and again, just to paint the picture for those listeners, this was a project that our whole sorority undertook for last Saturday. So
mm-hmm.
we decided with the Boston Alumni Chapter to have a barbershop and beauty shop brigade
mm-hmm.
where we teamed up with the local chapter of the NAACP, AKA's Alpha Kappa Alpha. That's another African-American sorority, again, doing public service. Also the Black Lawyers, the Black Law Students of Harvard Law School, and a Haitian-American group that teamed up with us, along with several young people with our Delta Gems program. There were about 40 or 50 of us all together. We had tons of information, broke up, and literally hit the streets and went to different barbershops and beauty shops in the community, giving them information and telling them about the census, and also the fact that there are jobs available. There are field jobs that are going to be available that pay $17 to $24 an hour that people can take. Now, again, why did we go to barber and beauty shops, Tanisha?
Well, as with most communities, we know that the barbershop and the beauty shop is the place where people go to engage in addition to getting their hair done, right,
right,
to engage in open, honest dialogue about the issues of the day. And so we as an organization firmly believe that it is important for our communities to be accurately counted. And so our thinking was that we would go into the barbershops and beauty shops to really start the conversation about the census. Because the reality is, Carol, that a number of pockets of our community have an honest fear of the census.
Right.
You know, that's the government coming in. You know, who knows what they're going to do with those numbers, and you want to keep the government out of your business. And so what we wanted to do was to start a dialogue within our community that would help to allay those fears. The reality is that the census is a confidential count.
Right.
It is protected by law for 74 years, so that I think that might be long enough for all of us.
And that's such an important point,
mm-hmm.
because, again, as we went from shop to shop, and I must say that the shop owners were fabulous. They were very welcoming. Many of them had been contacted in advance, so they knew we were coming. They allowed us to put the census posters up in their windows. We gave out information to the customers. They were terrific. So that certainly was a great audience to connect with. But in a couple of cases, and you probably saw the same thing with the
mm-hmm.
groups and the shops that you visited, there were people who were very apprehensive. Many
mm-hmm.
who are were born outside of the United States. One woman, you know, she's been here 20-some-odd years. She has proper paperwork. But that hesitation was just there. And
mm-hmm.
so even with those individuals who have been here a long time, born outside of the country, there's still that little bit of apprehension, if I fill out this paperwork, where is it going to go?
Right.
And who am I going to jeopardize if, in fact, I share all this personal information on this form?
Mm-hmm. That is a very real concern. And so we are doing our best within the community to help dispel the myth. The census is a confidential form that is to be completed and returned to the Census Bureau. It is the census information is for a particular use and purpose, and it cannot be used otherwise. The information is not shared with other governmental, identifying information is not shared with other governmental entities.
Right.
And so we want our community to hear that from people who live in the community, who look like them, who can, you know, and hopefully we can help to, again, dispel those myths. I think the other point that you raised is an important one, and that is that the Census Bureau is hiring. We know that, particularly here in Massachusetts, we have an unemployment rate of over 9%, and in many other
in other parts of the country too.
Exactly, and
no.
in other exactly, we have a real and that is the overall average. We know that the unemployment rate for people of color is higher than the average,
and sometimes double the figure. So if it's 9% here, in some pockets in some regions, it could be 18-20%.
Yes, yes.
Higher with younger African American males who,
yes.
for whatever reason, can't find employment.
Exactly. And so there are thousands of job opportunities with the U.S. Census, as you mentioned, paying between $17 and $24 an hour. These positions must be filled with people who live in the community they are serving. And that's an important point. So it means that the Census Bureau is looking for, you know, Latino census workers in historically Latino communities,
right.
Haitian census workers in predominantly Haitian communities, African American census workers in predominantly African American communities. So there's a real opportunity for employment for those of us who have been hardest hit
mm-hmm.
by this economic downturn. So we definitely encourage people to apply for those positions. You can go to uscensus.gov online in order to find out information about local testing sites.
Right.
And that's national. I'm referencing Massachusetts because that's where we are,
sure.
but these employment opportunities are nationwide.
Mm-hmm. So it's not only about just filling out the forms, but you can also possibly get employment short-term, but certainly it pays very well, and get connected with, I think, one of the most important industries or one of the important agencies and departments we have in this country. I've with my previous shows on the other networks, I've had census representation on my show. I will definitely have it again here because they do so much. We think about what they do every 10 years, but gosh, they do so much between those 10 years, too, in terms of projecting numbers, and those numbers are then used, as you have said, for allocations, for resource allocations, and every single one of us are impacted. I actually saw a list of all the different ways and the various ways that the census dollars impact us. The census only takes 10 minutes to fill out. It's not heavy-duty lifting. It's important that it gets filled out because of the significance that it has. And as this sheet that I'm looking at now says, keeping your answers confidential, and that's the Census Bureau's solemn oath. It's easy, it's important, and it's definitely safe. Now, a little caveat that both you and I experienced last Saturday that just really took me aback. And there are organizations and entities out there, for whatever reason, are determined to take advantage of people who will be filling out the census form. So it is really important, and I just circulated an email that was sent to me about scam artists now that are using information and using this time period. If by now you should not have received your census form. We're talking March 4th, 2010. As of last Saturday, the forms were just going out in the mail. So chances are, wherever you are in the United States, you probably have not received your census form. If you filled something out in the month of February, then you did not fill out the census form. You filled out a form that was sent by another organization for their own purposes, and I hope you didn't share a lot of your own personal business with them. With the census form, they don't ask you for your Social Security number. They're not asking for your political affiliations. They're not asking for any of that. They're just asking for the people who live in your household. So that's really important that now this month the census forms are being passed out and distributed across the United States. But if you filled something out in January or February, it was not the census form. If you fill something out this month that looks official, that comes from the federal government, you have, in fact, filled out the census form. Now, the people are using this politically. I must say, and this is not a political show per se, although we will talk about political issues, but the Republican Party has sent out to independent voters a form that looks like the census form, and they are asking very specific questions. It is up to you to either fill it out or not fill it out if, in fact, you are an independent voter. You're registered as an independent, but that is not the census form. Any thoughts about that, Tanisha?
I think that's a very important point to make. We strongly encourage everyone to complete the census form, the United States Census form. When it comes to you this month, the month of March in 2010, it will be easily identifiable as coming from the United States Census. And it will not ask for, as we stated, this is a confidential document. So it's not going to ask for personal identifying information. As you noted, it's not going to ask for your Social Security number. So it's not going to ask for your political party affiliation. So if you receive something in the mail that's asking you for that type of information, and is not readily identifiable as coming from the United States Census, we encourage you, of course, you can make your own decisions about whether or not you want to complete it, but we want you to know that that is not the U.S. Census form for 2010, okay? And this is important because in 2000, there's an estimate that over a million people of color, in particular, were undercounted in the census.
That's a lot of people.
And some of it was due to, I'm sure, the fear factor that we talked about that we are going to dispel. But then also a part of it was just us not understanding the impact of the census.
And there's another piece, too, that, mm-hmm. that we want to mention, and this is an ongoing issue in places like upstate New York, and I know I probably have some New Yorkers who are listening or who will be mm-hmm. listening. In upstate New York, because they have the state penitentiary up there, their numbers are disproportionately counted higher because of the prison population, and many mm-hmm. of those prisoners are from urban areas in, let's say, in the Manhattan, Harlem, Bronx area of New York
right.
that are undercounted. So those areas that are overcounted, and these are prisoners who can't even vote when they're in jail, those communities are going to fight very hard to keep their numbers at the same place because they run the risk of losing resources if, in fact, the count is changed that puts them at a disadvantage. So we've got those
yeah.
kind of nuances taking place, not just in New York, but certainly in areas in Massachusetts and all over the country.
Exactly. All over the country, wherever there is a penitentiary, as you noted, those individuals who are housed in a penitentiary are counted where the penitentiary is located,
right.
not where their quote-unquote home is. And that really does raise a significant, in my opinion, civil rights issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because when we get, when we really kind of get down to the base of that issue, what we find is that houses of correction are traditionally in rural communities that have very small populations outside of those who are residing in the penitentiary. Okay, and if you just bear with me for a moment and walk through the scenario, if you have a community that has, let's say, 100 quote-unquote residents in it, those who are not in the penitentiary but
right.
maybe working for the penitentiary or just there because for whatever reason,
right.
and then you have a penitentiary that is housing, oh, let's say, 3,000 to 4,000, inmates, you are presented with somewhat of an inaccurate count, right? Because what's going to happen is that community gets to count the inmates plus the residents as its total population, okay?
And that boosts their numbers. And
that boosts their numbers significantly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you think about what the allocation is used for, whether it's education, or it's for social service programs,
sure,
infrastructure.
Road,
exactly. They will receive a disproportionate amount of the $400 billion pot
right, right.
Than communities that maybe have more accurately reflected numbers.
And I want to make sure now we have Janine Qual. She's on the line. Janine, can you speak? I'm not sure if I've unmuted you. Janine Qual, who organized this entire effort with Boston Alumni Chapter. Janine?
Yes. Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Well, Tanisha did a pretty good job of summing up the most important information regarding this census.
You did the heavy lifting in terms of organizing all the groups.
Oh, and I definitely had a lot of help. There were, as you mentioned, about five different organizations represented. We were also joined by a newly elected Boston City Councilor at Large, Felix Arroyo, who is the chairman for the City Council's Census Committee 2010. So that was really exciting, and he was really appreciative of the work that we were doing.
Right.
And, you know, going to the different beauty and barbershops, as Tanisha said, it was a plan because we understand that these institutions are staples in our community, cultural staples, and we wanted to make sure that we go to these places and then hope to reach people who haven't traditionally been counted in the census, and Boston in particular is a city, the entire city, is always undercounted.
Right.
In the last census, it was undercounted, and we lost out on about $56 million.
I wish we had more time to talk about this. I wanted to make sure I brought you in during the last segment, and I just thank both you and Tanisha for your commitment for what you've done. And just thank you so much for being guests on my program. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, those in the chat room. We're going to keep this conversation going. Please visit me on www.msconnect.com. We'll have much more to talk about this going forward as we move on with Focus on Empowerment. Have a great week and a weekend, and we will see you next Thursday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Take care.